Moving on to segment two of our eviction process from a landlord's, an Ohio landlord's point of view. Next, we wanted to talk about the eviction complaint, its filing, the actual eviction hearing, and perhaps if we have time in this segment to move on to the magistrate's decision and the writ of restitution. Well, let's start out with the complaint and the filing process. Eric, any words of wisdom concerning that?
Yes, the next stage of the eviction, after you've posted the three-day notice, is the filing of the action, the filing of the forcible entry and detainer action. And you can find sample copies of that on our website. But you would be filing the action with the court, with the owner of the property as the plaintiff, and the tenants as the defendants. It's always best as well to add in the phrase "and all other occupants" to your defendants category, because you don't know, there may be some people there that you don't know about, and you want to make sure that this applies to them as well. Once you file the action with the court, you'll have to pay a filing fee to the court to do so. And
you know, before we move on there, as far as the plaintiff, now you mentioned the owner could be the plaintiff. How about the property manager? Because I'm sure there's a lot of landlords out there who have property managers. They may even, you know, the owner may be out of state and the property manager may be the only one in town. Could the property manager be the plaintiff?
Well, the property manager could be the plaintiff. Where you get into trouble is that Ohio Revised Code 5321.01 defines what a landlord is, and that defines it as either the owner or the manager of the property. However, the Ohio Supreme Court lays out the rules of civil procedure, which require that the proper party in interest bring the lawsuit. Therefore, I would say it's good practice to have the owner be the one that's filing the lawsuit. Now, whenever the owner files the lawsuit, let's say the owner lives in Arizona and the property manager lives in Cleveland, and the property manager files the action, it's really the property manager's lawyer that's going to be filing the action. And the property manager is competent to come in as a witness and testify on the owner's behalf as to what the basis for the breach of the lease is, and whether and when the three-day notice was posted. So all of the information can be given by the property manager at the hearing. So it doesn't need to be brought in the property manager's name. It can be brought in the owner's name.
What about the situation where an owner doesn't have a property manager, but the owner is out of state, obviously doesn't want to fly up to Ohio from, let's say, California or somewhere, you know, pay plane fees for an eviction hearing that may get postponed, just to show up and testify for 5 minutes. Is there another way to do it? Can the owner testify via affidavit?
Yes. What can happen is that the owner can testify via an affidavit, which is a sworn statement signed by in front of a notary, basically asserting certain facts as true. That the notice was served at a certain point, that the tenant was behind, that the tenant is still in the premises, and that the tenant is still behind on the rent. So, yes, the owner from out of state can put together an affidavit. The only trouble is that if the tenant comes in and testifies to the contrary, the judge is going to want to hear actual testimony from a landlord, because you can't cross-examine an affidavit. So the landlord may have to fly in after all, if the tenant comes in and fights the thing and denies ever getting the three-day notice.
Okay. Well, if you're an out-of-state owner, then there's still a way to perform the eviction without the owner being there, but it sounds like you still have a risk that the judge may require the owner to be there if the tenant start saying otherwise.
Or some representative of the owner who has knowledge of the facts.
Okay. Well, moving on, we were talking about the filing, and you mentioned, well, before we get to the filing, let's go back to the actual complaint itself, because I know there are a lot of landlords out there who have this question, and that is, How many parts is an eviction action divided up into?
An eviction action can be divided up into two parts. Part number one would be an action for possession of the premises. There can also be a second cause of action for actual damages, whether that be unpaid rent or whether that could be physical damages to the premises that the tenant caused.
Okay. And why is it divided up into two segments like that?
That's because eviction proceedings are summary proceedings. That means that they happen very quickly. Normally, the law takes quite a while to get to a case, but the Ohio legislature has provided in the Eviction Act a quicker way so that tenants and landlords can more quickly resolve, with the help of the court, who has the right to possession of the premises, because that's a very important thing, and you don't need that hanging over your head for 3, 4, and 5 months to be decided. That has to happen within 2 or 3 weeks so that everybody knows what plans to make and where to go and what to do. So what will happen is that once you file the eviction and you get service of process on the tenants, then the court will schedule a hearing, and that hearing will only deal with the elements of who has the right to possession. The court will not get into who owes what to whom and what damage was done to the place and by whom. The court will only look into, does the landlord have the right to the place or does the tenant have the right to the place? That's the only question that will be resolved at that point, because that way, if the landlord does have the right to possession, he can retake possession and cut off his damages at that point and try to get the place rented to somebody else. Or if the tenant has the right to the place, then the action, then that part of the action can be dismissed, and the tenant can at least go home that day with the relieved feeling that, hey, at least I'm not going to be put out anytime soon.
And I guess as a practical matter, evictions are divided up into two different actions, two different stages, one for possession, one for money damages, because the landlord needs to get possession of the property to determine what his damages are before he can proceed with the second cause of the second cause of action for damages for example, damages to the apartment, and also as far as determining a total amount of rent that's owed and late fees and things like that.
Now, some landlords don't bother with the second cause of action because they feel that the tenant might not be collectible, and it's not worth their time to pay an attorney to go after a tenant who doesn't have any money. There's a saying among trial lawyers that getting a judgment is easy, but collecting on it is hard. So if the tenant doesn't have any money that you can ever collect, doesn't have a job, doesn't have this, that, or the other, then you may not even want to bother with the second cause of action, even though the tenant does owe you the money.
Now, moving on to the actual filing of the complaint with the court, I've learned a little trick which has helped me out in several situations. And you mentioned getting service of process on the tenant, which means basically that the complaint and summons are actually served upon the tenant. And I know in eviction actions, it's okay for the bailiff to go and just post this information on their door.
That's correct, as for the first part of the action only.
And so what you mean by that, the second part of the action, which is the action for the money damages, that type of service is not acceptable, correct?
That's right. Service of process, just for the uninitiated here, you can't sue somebody in secret. You've got to act in a manner which is reasonably calculated to give the defendant notice that, hey, a claim has been filed against him and he needs to go on down to court and defend it. And the way we do that is by service of process. And so in an eviction action, the courts have decided that sufficient service of process is for the bailiff to go down there and tape a copy of the summons page and the first cause of action, and often the second cause of action too, because it's all part of the same document, onto the door. However, the rules for service of process for that second cause of action are different, because the second cause of action, that's just for money damages, or that's just for damage to the premises. That can be sorted out any other time. So the normal rules for service of procedure, service of process, apply there. And the normal rules for service of process are that you must first send the matter out by certified mail. And if it comes back either refused or unclaimed, then the court will send it out regular mail. And then if the court a few weeks later records, hey, I never got the regular mail back, then the tenant will be considered served with that second cause of action. But in a situation where we're doing an eviction, obviously since an eviction is a summary proceeding and we're trying to get to determine who has the right to possession quickly, it's been determined that certified mail, that normal process of serving a lawsuit, it just takes too long.
Well, one thing I do, since I know the bailiff's going to go ahead and serve the complaint and the summons upon the tenant, I go ahead and also check the boxes here in Franklin County to have the tenant served by certified mail and ordinary mail at the same time. Go ahead, it costs me like $6 or $9 extra. And that way, I get all three ways of service of process going on the tenant. And here in Franklin County, sometimes the bailiffs have trouble finding the address, and it'll often come back as unserved. But I've got the two follow-up methods of certified mail and ordinary mail going for me. And if one of those works before the eviction hearing, I don't have to show up at the eviction hearing and find out that the bailiff wasn't able to serve the eviction action on the tenant, and I don't lose any more time for my landlord clients if the other forms of service have actually taken place. So it's kind of a backup little procedure. And plus, at the same time, the other advantage of that is if, say, you go through the eviction action, the first hearing, and you get the tenant out, and then the landlord decides that he or she wants to pursue the back rent, the late fees, and the damages to the place, wants to pursue that cause of action, then we need to get service on the tenant. But the problem is the tenant's already gone, and you know, who knows where the tenant went. And so if I get service on the front side by certified mail, then I can go ahead and file a default judgment motion against the tenant, even though the tenant's moved on somewhere else.